You have arrived at your destination.
Hi, this is Gene Simmons from KISS, and you're listening to Sean vs. Wild. And guess what? Now that you've heard this, you owe me $29.95. Go to kissonline.com. Boom.
Wildlings, you're listening to the Sean vs. Wild podcast, seanvswild.com. It's time to rock and roll all night and podcast every Tuesday. I'm your host, as always, the man, the myth, the Sean Thriller Smith, the guy putting rad back into talk radio. Not only am I the host, guys, this week, you wanted it, you got it. I am going to be the guest, not only this week, but next week. It is a two-parter, so I'm going to make it short and sweet here at the beginning, or at least try to. First off, I want to give a big shout-out to Zach Pennington. He was the active host for these two episodes. He knocked it out of the park, absolutely crushed it. Zach, you need a podcast of your own, guys. We sat down for like a Tim Ferriss-style interview, guys, and I think it went well. First half is mostly about my music career. Second half is mostly about my podcasting career, but you, I think, will get a lot of good insight, things that I've not shared on the show before. Hopefully, you'll learn something new about me, and always, too, if you guys ever have any questions or anything in the future, hit me up. I will answer your questions right here on the show. If there's something that you're just dying to know, and you didn't get it out of these two episodes, let me know, and I'll answer it later. Also, want to give a big shout-out there to, of course, our sponsors at the Revival Recordings playlist. You guys know what I'm talking about. What you need to do is go to ffm.to/revival52 and subscribe to their playlist. They're putting out one new awesome track from Revival Recordings every single week in 2018. 52 weeks, 52 new BA tracks. So again, check that out, ffm.to/revival52. You guys know that June Divided last week, they're on Revival. That's how I found them. That's how you're going to find a bunch of awesome music as well. ffm.to/revival52. Check it out. Also, check out Audiophile Inc. My dude Shane has been printing my merchandise for well over a decade. It still looks awesome, guys. Trust me, I still have some of these old shirts hanging around here, wearing my own merch. But yeah, and he can do the same for you, make you some high quality screen printed materials there. All you have to do is go to audiophileinc.com. Talk to Shane. Tell him the Wild Man sent you. That's audiophileinc.com. Tell him the Wild Man sent you. Also, big shout out to my sponsor at Audible. Audible, of course, is an Amazon company. They have over 180,000 audiobooks for you to choose from. And just for listening to the Sean vs. Wild podcast, you are going to get a free 30-day trial. All you have to do is go to audibletrial.com/SeanVsWild. audibletrial.com/SeanVsWild. And when you do, they are going to give me a undisclosed amount of money to my PayPal account to help me keep the lights on. And trust me, it's pretty substantial, pretty good incentive, guys. So please go out there, sign up for your free 30 days, help support the show. And while you're at it, get an awesome audiobook. Okay, that's a win-win scenario. Also, guys, I want to tell you before I go any further, I got to make a big deal out of this because my good friend Joe Brock, you guys know him as that dirty dial booper. Joe Brock is taking this shit and making it official, man. The editing, the podcast, all that good sort of thing. So if you like the way my show sounds, you're going to like the way that he does business as well. He's going to make you sound like a million, trillion, bajillion dollars. All you have to do is go to Joe Brock at brockandrollproductions.com. Joe Brock at brockandrollproductions.com. It's official, guys. Brock and Roll Productions. He can edit your podcast and make you sound as good as me. Trust me. Over 80 weeks, 82 weeks, I believe it is this week. He's been killing it. So check it out, Joe Brock at brockandrollproductions.com. Send him an email. He's going to give you an awesome deal on your podcast, man. Sometimes you just need to step it up a little bit, or maybe you want a custom theme song, or maybe you want something going on. He's going to get you taken care of. Joe Brock at Brock and Roll Productions. All right, guys, that's all of the business out of the way. It's time to get to know a little bit more about me, but more importantly, it's time to get wild.
We're trying so hard to just make the magic, so instead of recreating it,
let's just create new magic.
Let's just create new magic. I feel like Jack Black and Kyle Gass and Tenacious D, where they're like all sitting around and they're just like, yeah, higher notes, higher notes, higher notes,
I told you to do the bendy thing.
Yeah. higher notes. Yeah. And did you get that?
Yeah.
You didn't press record?
Nope.
Always press record, Kyle. Always press record.
I'm like Prince. I actually have a microphone in every room in my house on constant repeat.
Could you imagine the type of
30 second loops in case I have an idea?
Yeah. All right, grab the guitar. I'm taking a
Siri,
shit.
Take bathroom recording 17 and send it to the cloud.
You know what's crazy, though, is you could probably talk into your watch and it really would happen.
Yeah, I've got some pretty fancy shit going on here at the Casa.
Yeah, so, the fact that you were like, hey, turn on the living room lights. And I was like, are you talking to me? And then we walk into the kitchen, like, turn on the kitchen lights. I'm like, I'm not your butler. Get out of here. But you're talking to your watch and the lights come on automatically.
It's funny because it makes you seem like a douchebag in multiple ways.
Yeah, you seem
like if you think I'm actually telling you to just turn the lights on in my house, that's such a douchey thing to do. And then I'm just talking into my watch, and that's equally as douche.
Turn on the living room lights. I don't even know where they are. Yeah, this is the first time I've ever been here.
This is my first time in your house. Well, fucking figure it out.
Yeah, dude, you were like Dick Tracy or like a Power Ranger.
Yeah, I could see it. I could see that. Well, the problem with the Power Rangers is I don't have four other equally douchey people to hang out with.
Yet.
Yeah, well,
but now
true.
That I've seen that watch.
Yeah, now that you're here, we only need three more.
That's it. Guys, we're recruiting.
Yeah, we need at least two women.
And just pick the color that you look best in, the one that you have the most shirt. You're wearing a, what is that? Is that black or is that blue or gray?
I think it's like brownish gray.
Okay, you can be the brownish gray ranger. I'll be the black ranger. Obviously, I'm wearing a black shirt.
I have cacti. Is that a type of ranger, the cacti ranger?
I am the denim ranger. I wear jeans every day.
I'm clearly the pink ranger if I have all the lights in my house right now are pink.
That's true. Man, it is stylish in here. High vaulted ceilings. Guys, if you hear a little natural reverb, that's because we are in the middle of luxury here at Zach Pennington's
place. We are
place.
At Abbey Road.
Yes, essentially.
On the original console.
Yes, exactly. George Martin is actually engineering this. George, boop those dials, please.
Exactly. This week, we have a different dial booper.
Yeah, we have Sir George Martin.
We have Chris Lord Alge booping the dials this week.
Exactly.
So tell me about your first real job.
Oh, man, you're just going straight into it, red hot.
Well, I want to know about this because before I introduce you, I think we all come from somewhere. And I want people to be grounded by who you are before they even know who you are.
I gotcha.
Yeah, okay. So what was your first real job?
My first real job, my first actual job was when I was in high school, and it didn't last very long. It only lasted a couple weeks. But I worked as a dishwasher at Neil and Patty's Fireside Grill, Sellersburg, Indiana. Guys, and if you have ever been there, the food is subpar at best, okay? This is not a glowing review. But the people were nice. They gave a, 15-year-old kid at that time a job washing dishes and make a little extra money. And I remember, they had to share tips. I was dishwasher, and I shouldn't say it lasted only a couple weeks. I was dishwasher for a couple weeks, and then I moved on to busboy, making it happen.
I was a busboy as well.
And there was a lady, because they're like, you
eventually
have to...
I became a bus man.
A busman. Bus person, please.
Yeah.
But
well, that was 2017. I became a bus person.
Right, yes. But there was like a little lady that worked there, and they had to do tip share. And they're like, you have to give your bus person at least $3. And literally, I would work my ass off for her all night long, and she would give me
the minimum amount.
$3.
Yeah.
So you would work, you would make it happen. They would get on you too, and then you would walk out of there with $9 plus your paycheck of $8 an hour, or not even $8 an hour, probably $6 at that time.
To be fair, though, you could have paid for two semesters of college with that much money back then.
Yes, that's true. Guys, this is 2002.
Yeah.
2000.
College was $100 a semester.
Right. And
you could buy a four-bedroom house for $750.
That is darn true. But yeah.
But so, now everyone has iPhones, so.
That's, yeah.
It's either iPhones or healthcare. You can't have it all.
Yeah, you can't have them both, guys. What do you think this is, all right? You can choose between luxury or health.
All right, so we've got ourselves a special episode today, if you can't tell.
Absolutely, very special.
First of all, we're not in the Smithsonian.
No, we are definitely not.
I am not Sean.
Not yet.
My name is Zach Pennington, and we are here at the Red Door of Butchertown recording this special episode. My guest today on the podcast is none other than Sean Thriller Smith.
Dude, thank you so much for doing this. I'm really excited about it. It was a novel idea you had.
It wasn't my idea. I think it was someone else's idea.
It was a novel idea somebody had on Facebook, and you were like, dude, let's do
this. I stepped it up. So some of you might know Sean from his work in the band Tears Like Bullets.
Oh, yes, obviously.
A Suburban Blood Drive.
That's a big one. I just had Nick Dittmeyer on the podcast.
Some of you might know him from his work in the band Monroe.
Yes.
Or Heartbreak Kid.
Yes.
I think I first came across you probably in Suburban Blood Drive, but I definitely remember you the most from Creatures.
Definitely. That's back when we were partying at Nathan Rogers' house together.
And last but not least, some of you might recognize Sean from his work, Boop and the Skins,
yep,
in the band Uh-Huh Baby Yeah.
I did Boop some Skins. I licked a lot of drumsticks for several years in Uh-Huh Baby Yeah.
I've never seen more splinters on a man's tongue.
I'm saying that was my trademark. And the drumstick lick is still on the Sean vs. Wild logo. I felt like it's such a
quintessential part of who you are.
Yeah. And I have some press photos that I want to do where I'm holding the microphone in one hand and I'm holding an ice cream cone in the other and I'm just licking the microphone. I think it'd be perfect podcast. I'll just have like a melty ice cream cone, but I'm licking the microphone.
That would be perfect. So on today's episode of
that would be perfect.
Zach versus Wild, or well, I guess this would be Zach versus Sean versus Wild.
I like Zach and Shawnee make a podcast.
Zach and Shawnee make a podcast on today's episode of Zach and Shawnee make a podcast. I have the distinct pleasure of interviewing Sean. A lot of you have been listening to Sean now for nearly 100 episodes. Where are we at?
We'll be
pretty close.
Not 100, but we are pretty close. We're going to be about 82, 83 by the time this comes out.
That's so great, man. I'm so glad that you've been doing this as much as you have.
Thank you. And the magic behind it is that it's every week. So
that's a lot of work.
And sometimes there are multiple episodes per week, but I started January 3rd, 2017, and I have not missed a week.
That's awesome.
So about a year and a half in.
I admire your dedication. I know that a lot of people know me for the things that I've started. But I've started 100,000 things you've never heard of because they never get past day two or week two. So keep up the good work.
Oh, thank you for that, sir. I appreciate that.
So I was doing some research today, as any good Larry King student.
Yeah, you have your suspenders on today.
I have my suspenders on. I am 174 years old.
My shoulders are so broad. You ever notice that Larry King's like his shoulders are so broad, but like it seems like where those suspenders are, he's got like permanent indentions there, like permanent valleys.
I'm convinced that Larry King is actually being held up by a coat hanger in the back, which would explain his shape.
Yeah, that would
like his head is taped to the hook part. And yeah, then that's hooked onto like a door.
He's just suspended. He's a marionette.
He's essentially a marionette.
Larry King may have passed on years and years ago. We are not sure of that yet.
He's essentially the Weekend at Bernie's of
of CNN.
Of CNN.
Is
interviews.
He even on CNN anymore? Did he? I think he's
off.
No longer has a show.
I think David Letterman is taking over the Larry King spot as like the cool old guy who interviews people.
What do you think about David Letterman's beard?
You know, I've only seen it in the previews of his new show. I haven't touched it, so I don't really have a lot of opinions of it. You know, I like to touch a beard before I really weigh in on it.
Yes, before I have to walk a mile in that beard's shoes before I want to judge him.
I have to scratch a mile
of that beard.
Beard follicles.
I just don't, you see like Jim Carrey's rocking a beard now, David Letterman. I mean, heck, everybody's got a beard. Hell, I've got a beard. Zach doesn't have a beard, but.
No, genetically predisposed not to.
Not by choice.
I look like Spencer from The Hills if I grow a beard, so.
Nice.
Creepy flesh-colored beard.
Nice. Yeah, I heard that he's, I don't know. I heard the beards really brought him down. So you definitely don't want that.
I'm staying out.
But what I'm saying is, like, you know, a lot of these older celebrities are just like growing these huge burly beards now, mm-hmm. And it's like I guess for David Letterman's sake, he just stopped caring. He's like, hey, I'm not on late night anymore. I'll just grow this big ass beard. More power to you. But it's so weird to me to see it. I'm just like, come on, man.
Yeah,
I want to see the David Letterman.
Well, I think it's the like
maybe we're gonna extinguish. Like, I'm serious now.
Or not even that. I think it's more the down to earth. Like, I've been above you normal people because I am a TV god.
Right.
And now I'm just like one of you.
I'm just a normal Hoosier, just like everybody else.
Drinking my John Cougar Mellencamp brand coffee.
I'm drinking the Mellencamp Kool-Aid, dude.
where you said the last sit down restaurant you're at was Dunkin' Donuts. What did you say?
No, I said it
Dairy
was
Queen.
Dairy Queen. Like the last set. Where's the last place you went and sat down? Dairy Queen.
Where's the last place you and David Letterman had dinner? Dairy Queen.
Dairy Queen. That's yeah. I hope he would take me
just
there.
Just dudes with beards eating
chicken strips.
Chicken strips and NASCAR ice cream birthday cakes with their names on them.
Now there's Jurassic Park, so we're going to have to get the Jurassic, I can't remember what it's called. It's called like the Jurassic Treat or something. Jurassic Chomp.
Yeah.
We got to get some of those.
Wait, they have Jurassic Park branded ice cream now.
Yes, they do.
I don't see commercials. I pay for the Hulu that doesn't have commercials. So I don't have cable.
If you walk into a Dairy Queen, yes, Jurassic. There's a new Jurassic point. Park
coming out. I also don't walk
up.
Into Dairy Queens. Often enough.
I sit down there, actually. Yeah,
they bring me the menu.
Right, yeah. I could just, but anyway, yeah, Jurassic Park is like the sponsor for Dairy Queen in the next month or so.
That makes sense.
That's what kind of toys you're getting in the kids' club.
So I'm going to jump into the hard stuff here. Are you ready?
Dude, I am ready. And I've done, just to preface this, I don't want to, you know, this is your show, so you feel free to cut me off. But what I want to say is, you know, I felt like I've done an episode where it's just me kind of talking about my show or about myself to myself. And I'm hoping that with this, we can get down to just open up a little bit more. Get people the real deal, the raw facts.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
My goal by the end of this show...
Is just have me crying.
I was going to say is that we'll have laughed.
Yes.
We'll have cried.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have learned something.
Yeah, I'm down with that.
Do you think we can make that? We've already laughed like 472 times.
No, we'll definitely laugh. Laughing will be the easy part.
So... I've only got to cry and educate. Let's go.
So we're going to start cutting onions here towards the second half of the hour.
I'm going to cut right into the hard stuff. Is that okay?
Okay. Let's make it happen.
What are your top three roller coasters?
Okay, the hard-hitting news, guys. What are your top three?
That's literally the first question I came up with when I was writing questions.
Oh, man. Okay, so these aren't even...
they don't have to be, like, globally top, like, your top three.
Yeah, they probably don't even have to be current because...
No, they can be out of commission for a lot of reasons. Safety is usually the number one reason.
I loved the vampire at Kentucky Kingdom, and that definitely went down due to a safety issue. And actually, as a matter of fact, one time when I went to Kentucky Kingdom as a kid, the vampire got stuck upside down mid-loop for about 45 minutes. And that was insane.
That is insane.
I wasn't on it, but
you were there.
It happened. I was there. I witnessed it. I should have got a T-shirt.
Was it a stand-up or a sit-down? So I grew up in Cincinnati, so I'm a Kings Island kid. I'm not a Kentucky Kingdom kid. So tell me about the vampire.
Vampire basically was just a regular roller coaster. It had one loop. It was sit-down.
Okay.
Those are
great.
I'm trying to think, man. I had
it got stuck in its only loop.
Yes, exactly. It only had one. See, so many.
You had one job.
So many of my friends don't ride roller coasters. So, a lot of times when I go to theme parks and what have you,
they're like, "Oh, there's an ice skating show."
Yeah, it's like usually me and Kevin. So, like, Kevin and I rode the Superman ride at Darien Lake, which is in New York. It used to be a Six Flags over Darien Lake, but now it's like a music venue where they have Warped Tour. So we. Hmm. Rode the Superman. That was pretty cool.
They play the Three Doors Down song on repeat?
I wish. But they do play the John Williams Superman score.
Oh, nice.
During it. Which I'm surprised they still have the rights to Superman.
The second best song about Superman?
Yes, exactly. The second best. This will go down in history, guys. It's the second best song about Superman. Okay, so top three. I'm going to say the Vampire. I'm going to say the Superman at Darien Lake. And then when it comes to Kings Island, you know, I'm not going to say the Beast because the wooden roller coasters are just rough on your boy.
Yeah.
I loved, let's see, Top Gun.
Top Gun was your legs got to dangle.
Yes. Top Gun.
It always made me nervous because I was like a flip-flops guy, you know.
Can't lose those flops, dude, mid-term.
Yeah. You don't want to drop your thong on a roller coaster.
Here's the number one. Plural, okay, actually, this is my number one favorite. Outer Limits Flight of Fear at Kings Island.
Dude.
0 to 60
Yeah.
In like 2 seconds.
Fun fact, that roller coaster got me over my fear of roller coasters.
Yeah, because you're just in the dark screaming.
I was terrified of roller coasters as a kid, and it was the hill.
Right.
It's that just...
Yeah, that slow burn of anticipation.
Like, fuck a bunch of that. And Outer Limits, you just get in and you're flat. You're like on the ground or you're inside.
You're underground. You're like in a building.
Yeah, you're in a volcano. You have no idea what's going on. and then you're 0 to 60 in like 3 seconds, and you're flipping, and you're, and there's lights, and you can't see anything, and it's really intense. And then you get off, and you're like, that wasn't so bad.
Right.
And that was literally the ride that broke my fear of roller coasters.
Yeah. The biggest anticipation is when they're like 3, 2.
And then they go off before
they. Yeah, exactly. Or they're just like 3, 2, 1. And then it goes off way delayed. That's like the biggest anticipation that you have.
There's that guy whose only source of power is hitting the start button.
Right.
Some like equally 15-year-old. It's like they gave me the chance.
Yeah. I'm judge, jury, and executioner on
this
ride.
They don't tip out the roller coaster guy, so I got to press the button. That's all.
I haven't been to Kings Island since they lost the Paramount license, though.
Oh, interesting.
So now it's like...
It's been a minute for me as well.
It's probably not Top Gun. It's probably like, I don't know, Flight Star.
Flights of the Concords.
I wish.
But it's just Chrysler Concords.
Right, exactly. It's just an actual bird, not as cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's probably...
Condors, like, there you go.
Yeah, the Outer Limits. You don't have the Outer Limits anymore, so it's probably just like underground flight of fear.
Tunnel of Doom.
Right, yeah.
Like everything's just of doom. Every single ride there.
Temple of Doom.
Snake of Doom. But that's Indiana the one Jones. That they can't actually say.
Yeah, but not the Indiana Jones one.
They'll be like, it's a Jewish temple of doom. It's just like a lot of Torah reading and
yeah, you're gonna hate this
bar mitzvahs. All right, so let's really get into the meat. I'm glad that we could warm up on such a hard hitting question. Man. I know you're not the three things you're not supposed to talk about, right? Religion, politics, and roller coasters, but we went there.
We did, guys.
And we learned something too.
Yeah. Breaking news. We don't care. We don't give an F.
Yeah. We don't give two Fs, let alone one. How'd you get started playing drums?
I got started playing drums in the middle school band, sixth grade band. When I was in fifth grade, some people came to school, and they had instruments you could check out and try out, and then they gave you a little test to see which one that you would be the best at. And I had kind of decided...
Was there a maximum number of instruments you could... Like, could you take 74 instruments home? Like, I'm going to try the sousaphone.
Well, you can only just... You could just demo them in the auditorium that day.
Oh,
you
got it.
You could take them home and whatever. And
that would have been me. I would have been the kid that's like, all right, Mom, it's between the tuba,
right,
the marimba,
right,
the harp.
I'm going to be the trombone. Could you imagine being like a tuba player? I mean, no offense to any tuba players out there, but...
You just lost 2/3 of your audience with that comment.
I know.
Can you imagine being a tuba player? Like, fuck this guy.
You know what?
I'm delete, fucking unsubscribe. Out of
here, but that seems like such hard work to take on. You know what I'm saying? It seems like
a
big responsibility with a tuba.
It's like the bass drum.
Yes, that's true. Oh, man, somebody's burning rubber outside.
Oh, yeah. I'm surprised it wasn't a 70,000-pound concrete truck burning rubber. That's all day, every day at my house.
That's what's up. But yeah, somebody, you know, they come in, let you demo the equipment, and then you take a little test, and they're, you know, you're like, hey, I'm into drums. Okay, well, you scored very well on the rhythm test, or you scored very well on whatever this little dumb-ass test is that they give you. And so I was like, yeah, I want to play drums. And then they kind of send a little form home with you about the pricing, and then your parents over the summer can purchase your instrument ready for sixth grade band.
What was your instrument? Was like a snare?
Pearl snare drum. Yep.
Marching snare.
Yeah. Well, just a standard steel yes. shelled snare drum there.
Like on a thin snare stand.
Yes. On a thin snare stand and stand up, you know, like the orchestra stand. So it's all stand up. And
I guess it wouldn't have to be a marching snare. It would just be a snare.
Yeah. And then you get a pair of drumsticks in there, and then you get a drum key. Which actually
did
still
they give you one pair of drumsticks?
They give you one pair of drumsticks. They give you
which would actually last a middle schooler all of middle school.
Yeah, actually, it definitely would. Like you wouldn't. You could buy sticks. You could buy sticks from the school, but yeah, most people just the only time you got a new pair of sticks is like, oh, these are black. These are have like a you know
chrome,
LED tip.
Chrome tips,
right? Yeah. Just for show, you know, you just want to be a big show.
You never actually do any physical damage to the sticks.
No.
Unlike the drumsticks that are currently in my house, which are basically toothpick thin now from my drummer beating the shit out of them.
Yeah. A pair of drumsticks lasts me one practice.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, if I'm lucky. But I usually buy, I don't know, well, when I was super active, I would buy 10 pair at a time and be able to keep them for maybe 3 or 4 practices, keep mixing and matching the sticks or whatever. And
yeah.
And then finally whittle it down. Do you just get more? So
literally whittle it down.
Exactly.
So but you're playing, you're not marching snare. I keep imposing that on
I'm
you.
I'm playing snare.
You're playing snare in the orchestra.
Yeah. In the band.
In the band. Okay. And so what's the transition? Where do you get, you know, the additional drums? Where do you get a kick drum? Where do you get a tom? Like, when does the set expansion project happen for you?
Gotcha. So you play snare, and then there would be some, it was so cool because they would have like a, you know, they would be, there's some kid that would play the bass drum or whatever, and then they would have like a cymbal, like a, so you'd have sheet music that would have like bass drum, snare, and cymbal parts. So you get to play one cymbal.
Like monkey style?
While you're like playing the snare drum. No, just one, like on a stand. So you get to play the cymbal part and the snare part while somebody else played the bass drum part.
Was it a ride or a crash?
Yeah, kind of like just a ride. I mean, the school cymbals were probably Zildjian at one time, but there are just no, they're 30 years old. You know what I'm saying? But then
they were actually used on a Zeppelin album.
Right, exactly. Charlestown Middle School got the John Bonham's actual symbol that it, you know, from Houses of the Holy.
And it sounds awesome.
Yes, it's absolutely 100%.
With a weak wristed middle schooler just pinging that ride just bell.
Barely tapping it.
Yeah.
But I would say I always loved watching drummers, and I like to learn. I'm just super into music in general, and I begged my parents to get me a drum kit. And then in eighth grade, so it took them like 2 years, but for Christmas, I got a drum kit that year. So Christmas 1999, I got a drum kit that year, and then also in eighth grade, we were able to do pep band, which you would play the drum. You could play the drum kit, the drum set in pep band. So you would play at basketball games and what have you. And that's basically when I started playing.
You got
the drum
to play kit in pep band.
Yeah. So that's basically, and I was like, I'm not trying to toot my own horn here, but I was kind of like the best one at the kit. There were so many people that could bury me with like the snare drum, and like they do all the rudiments and the tricks.
Yeah.
But I was like good at the kit because I had one at home and I played it all the time.
You're the kit guy.
So
even now, like I'm a drummer at heart. I've always played guitar because I've always lived in apartments. You know, I've never like until literally 2 months ago, I never had a place to keep a drum set. But even now at UofL basketball games, I just watch the drummer in the pep band and I'm like, that could have been me.
Right. Yeah.
Like I'm jealous of like some 19-year-old fucking should've college sophomore. I'm like, if my parents just stayed together long enough for me to live in a house, I could have had a drum set.
We had a garage, luckily. Yeah. So it was like, that's where the drums went.
I shared garages at best. We, so the drums are like a part of who I am. And I love drummers. I love you. I love Corey. I love Joel. I just always wanted to be a drummer. Clay's a drummer.
Yeah.
I mean, just like all my favorite people are drummers, and I'm a wannabe drummer. So I'm super, that's actually 2/3 of what all my questions are actually just about.
Just about drums. Well, the easy thing about being a drummer though is, I feel like, you know, I don't want to sell drummers short, but I just feel like drums are something that if you are familiar with rhythm based instruments, it's easy to pick up and learn your fundamentals. You know what I'm saying? So you can actually be pretty solid, within a course of just practicing for a little bit. To be, you know, extremely amazing, like, say, a Corey Eaves, you know, that's going to obviously take years of practice. But the cool thing about drums is, you know, you just kind of think about what the beat sounds like, and then you can just kind of work it out, play it, and you get good in about a year or so.
One of my favorite sayings is there's only 12 notes, and then depending on how you play drums, there's maybe only, like, 3 notes.
Yeah. Mostly it's hi-hat,
snare. Kick, snare, hi-hat. There's exactly. There's only 3 things to hit, so.
Right.
I'm pretty sure I saw Dillinger one time, and that was, like, his entire drum kit.
To be honest with you, that's what got me through, you know, 12, 13 years of playing music in bands is kick, snare, hi-hat. And when I didn't use, the only thing that I did was, like, sometimes I'd put the ride cymbal in the chorus. So, or I'll start the verse with the ride cymbal, and then play the same beat on the open hi-hat during the chorus.
Getting nasty.
Whatever.
That's all you need.
You don't need to church it up, guys. That's my thing when it comes to drums. I feel like less is a little bit more. That's my style, though.
I love that about you. I've always loved that because it's so easy to overplay.
Yeah, and I would rather just be super tight and super loud and really big sounding and play a few notes than to play 10,000 notes at a breakneck speed where you're just like barely grazing the kit.
Well, you know, my dad doesn't actually know anything about music, and he won't listen to this podcast, so it won't matter. But I will say one of the insights he gave me was, you know, the groove, the rhythm has to resonate with people. Like, he watched people at one of our shows and he said certain rhythms had people kind of shaking their hips or shaking their heads. And he's like, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, that's why pop music is just like almost the exact same drum beat all the time. You
it's
know?
Like four on the floor, or just like
yeah,
one and two and like, yeah.
That's so, what, that's how that's the magic, guys. We're giving you a glimpse behind the curtain.
So you played in the school band.
Yes.
Who was the first people that you played with that weren't in school band? Like, who was the first bud you jammed with?
My friends, Jonathan Dean and Travis Edwards. They were friends of... Travis Edwards was friends with my sister, who's 3 years older than me. And Jonathan Dean was his friend. And they knew that I played drums, and they knew that I was also into, like, punk rock music. But really, the thing is I knew kids in school that had, like, punk rock t-shirts, and I would just, like, put on my AOL profile that I liked these bands, even though I didn't really know much about it. I just wanted to look cool on AOL. But they put...
Your screen name was, like, Dead Kennedys 64
yes, absolutely. Yes, it'd be, like, Dead Kennedys 199 at AOL.
And then people are like, what's your favorite Dead Kennedys song? You're like, the early stuff.
Yeah, dude, yeah.
But the new stuff's good too. They're like, new stuff.
New stuff.
They're putting out new stuff. You're like, well, newest.
You mean like Lard?
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly what I mean.
Yeah.
But
their most recent album.
It's pretty good too. If you, yeah. But so they hit me up because they're like, oh, you got a drum kit and you know how to play and you like these bands. So I just listened to a bunch of songs.
You did for those of. This is not a video podcast.
Quotes,
you
like
did air
bands.
Quotes when you said like these bands.
Because I didn't know who they were.
Yeah,
and then
no
they just let
clue.
Me borrow the CDs and stuff, and I got to know yeah. who they were and memorized a...
So you're doing covers.
A lot of covers, yeah.
Yeah,
so first what... band that I was in was just like a cover band of doing random little punk rock covers, you know?
So three-piece?
Three-piece.
Who sang?
No one. No singer.
Oh, you guys just covered the music.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Even better. It's funny that no one ventured to sing a genre of music where no singing talent is required.
Exactly.
Like you could have just had a headset mic and be like,
"We didn't have a PA. We couldn't afford the PA. We just had our instruments."
You didn't have like a Garth Brooks style countryman.
No, I
wireless headset.
Wasn't
mic.
Clay Nevels. Shout out to Clay Nevels who had one.
You weren't Sting.
Yeah.
Or wait.
Madonna.
No.
Lady Gaga.
Oh, I was thinking of Genesis.
Oh, Phil Collins.
Phil Collins. Bass drums, they're the same instrument.
But, yeah, so, and then we later played in a band called Two for Flinching that had a singer. But
nice.
It was Jonathan Dean, Travis Edwards, myself, Ryan Davis. If you know Ryan Davis from his basement shows and State Champion and Cropped Out Fest and a bunch of other stuff that he does here in Louisville. But
so that wasn't on the list of bands you were in.
Yeah, That wasn't a really legit thing. We played a few shows.
Two for Flinching?
Two for Flinching.
Not to be confused with Five for Fighting.
Exactly. Two for Flinching, a line from Stand By Me, if you remember that.
That was a great movie.
So.
That was a great song.
It was a great song.
You guys wrote your entire band around that one song. I think I could still play that on piano. All right, so you're playing in these bands. We mentioned a lot of the bands that you were in. You've gone into some depth on some of these on the podcast, so I'm not going to inundate people with that. I'm going to try to get laser focused on a few things. Right?
Gotcha.
So I think for me personally, one of the things that's most interesting is the time you guys spent on Warped Tour.
Mm-hmm.
You've talked a little bit, I know on the Kevin episodes, you guys have talked about Warped Tour, but talk to me more specifically about how did you all get into the barbecue band thing, right? Is that
right.
What it's called?
Well, how we did that is in 2013, we were talking with a label. We were on Little Heart, and we had started talking with another record label called Streaker Records, and they're out of New York, and they were interested in putting out our album. And so we kind of inked a little shared deal with Streaker and Little Heart. They both jointly put out our EP Trash Talk on its first run.
It's a great EP.
Thank you very much. And yeah, first, if you have the Streaker logo on it, man, that's pretty limited a dish. But
did Jordan do that one?
Jordan did it. Yeah, Jordan produced it for sure. And but so Streaker.
This is Jordan's every other podcast shout out.
Yes, exactly. So
this podcast is brought to you by Jordan Haynes. Jordan Haynes
at Early Gray Studios. Go feel free to check out Early Gray Studios.
Dot biz.
But yeah, so basically, Streaker had an in with the lady that was in charge of catering, and she was like, "We need what's called a catering band, where basically we need extra hands that bust their ass working. Basically, you're working in a restaurant type environment, a catering environment, all day long, and then you have the opportunity to play some shows in 2013. And the guys were like, hey, do you want to do this? And so we were like, okay, yeah, we're going to drop everything and go out on the road and do this catering band gig. The thing is they gave us about 48 hours notice. So we dropped everything that we could, put up like a PayPal to help with some donations to get
out there
all summer.
What was the first date?
Seattle, Washington.
Of course, the most practical one to go to.
Right, the furthest out. So we got there super, super late, but that's when we joined the tour. So we got there about 6 o'clock in the evening. But like I said, we had 48 hours notice. Seattle was about a 30-some-hour drive, 32-hour straight drive. And we
did
made
you have
it there.
Did you have a trailer, or was it just the van?
We only needed the van at that point because we just had our guitars and stuff.
The back line
because they
was
had
provided.
A back line.
Okay,
there.
Cool.
And
I think that's how it should be in general. Like I'm at the point in my life now where I'm like, if you're not just showing up to a gig with like a USB drive, like here's or even that, like here's my iCloud password. Like I'm gonna download all the tones.
You know? I'm gonna download these tones.
Like we're so close to that where it's like, here's my Kemper login. Like.
Yeah.
Like, why are there 550,000 Ampeg 8x10 cabs in the United States, like, at any moment in time?
That is true.
I'm like, hey, could you move your Ampeg 8x10 cab so I could put my Ampeg 8x10 cab up on stage? It's got a different, no, it doesn't.
I would say every venue out there listening, just buy an Ampeg 8x10.
And then message all the bands in advance.
And say, provided.
And say, well, not only say provided, say, and if you think you have another piece of gear that is better than this, fucking kill yourself.
Yes, exactly. This is the only thing that you'll need.
Someone's like, well, I have a David Eden 220. Like, seriously, just jump off a bridge.
Guys, you heard it first right here on the Zach and Shawnee Make a Podcast.
We found the one bass tone that works for literally every genre of music. Just fucking plug into this cabinet, for the love of God.
Yeah, and if you don't like it, just... please fucking just get a show somewhere
else. We're about to play Spinelli's, and my only caveat was I'm sharing cabinets. I'd refuse to bring cabinets up and down the stairs of that place.
Dude, imagine bringing a drum kit everywhere you go.
Is that what it feels like?
Yeah, it sucks.
Oh, my gosh.
Because every drum kit, that's the thing. That's one thing. You know, you'll go places in New York and stuff, they have like a stage kit. The kit that they might have will be like a $500, you know, starter kit. It's not the same, you know.
Yeah.
Cymbals that you're not used to, setups that you're not used to, drums you pretty much have to always bring.
And I'm actually okay with that. Like when people tell us like, oh, use the house kit, I'm like, no.
Yeah, exactly.
But then the flip of that is when someone's like, our cab has tone, I'm like, no, it doesn't. You're an idiot.
you're a dumbass.
Oh, your Vintage 30 with a SM57 close mic on it, it's going to sound different than my Vintage 30 with it. Like, no, it's going to sound like shit regardless of what, like.
Needless to say, guys, the only thing that matters is that you don't mosh into the pizza warmer. So please, let's get on with it. You know what I'm saying?
Just or that plug you don't eat this. Three full pizzas during the concert. That's my goal.
I'm ready for that challenge. I want to see it done.
I think it's going to happen. So you guys are on Warped Tour, you're doing the catering gig. Talk to me about like what was your angle there, right? So obviously the work sucks, right? You're doing it
just,
for the exposure.
It's hard, and it was John.
It's
Brayboy
the hottest day of the year in every city that you're like the Farmer's Almanac. They route it around the hottest day. They go, okay, what's an impractical drive and an unbearable heat? And then that's how they map it. And you're in that your work, you're doing the only thing worse than playing music is like serving hot food.
Dude, so both years between barbecue and catering, I will say it's the hardest work we've ever done as a band. And I think it's very taxing on a band, just to get totally real with you, because, you know, especially when you have a job to do, you know, if you're doing catering, two people have to be up at 7 a.m. and start working in the catering. And then from there, you got to go out and sell your merchandise, and then you have to play the show, and then everybody has like a shift as to, you know, when they're going back to catering to work, and you work from 7 a.m. to the end of the day.
Which is like 8 p.m., 10 p.m., what time?
10 p.m.
Yeah,
and then there's roughly a barbecue, there's an after party, so it might be 12 p.m., 1 p.m. And then you know, have 6 or 7 hours to make a 6-hour drive. And when you're a band of our size, you drive yourself. So you
don't have a driver. You don't have a bus. You right. don't have air conditioning to exactly. sleep in.
Yeah. And you just sleep in on your same sweaty pillow every yep. night when you do get a chance to sleep.
Yep.
You drink energy drinks and stuff all day long just to stay awake.
Yep.
You're out in the sun, you're out in the heat, you're interacting with all these people.
But hey, you're making tens of dollars.
That's true. And the thing is, that sounds so like...
dozens of fans.
That sounds so like I don't want that to sound like I'm complaining. I just want to give you guys the scope of...
No, that's what I want to hear. It's just the not, fucking truth. It sucks.
There's not a lot of... there's a lot of fun to be had there, but it looks glamorous. You make it look glamorous on Instagram. You make it look so cool and so much fun. On Facebook, you build yourself up.
Even for the big bands on the tour, yeah. Warped Tour is a fucking just slog.
Yeah, because even for the big bands, you know, you go in and you sit on your bus all yep. day, and then you play, and then you just get back on your bus.
Yeah.
And then you got to do your signings and meet and greets, and it's hot out, and, like, you just live in a bus.
I'm pretty sure, what's the other guitarist from Every Time I Die?
Jordan,
yeah. I'm pretty sure I've seen him throw up at every single Warped Tour performance. And I've seen him at Warped Tour like 15 times.
I guarantee it. I mean, there's some days.
Between the alcohol and the heat. Just yeah, like
there's some days it's
puking.
120, you know, degrees outside.
Yeah.
Like in and Vegas headbanging, and stuff like that. It's like 120 degrees and it's like, oh my God, this is insane.
And they're also, not only is it the hottest day of the year in every city, but they're also like, hey, do you have anywhere that's like newly paved blacktop where we yep. could host this?
That was Las Vegas.
Like the blackest, like do you have anything that's made out of dark matter that we could just host this on?
Do you have
on?
Like a Spinal Tap album cover black top that we could put down so
do,
that way your
do you
shoes
have any,
will melt?
Do you have any heated parking structures that we could host this on?
Exactly. But, you know, just to kind of... reiterate, I mean, it's the hardest work that we've ever done in as a band, that we ever did as a band, and that I've probably ever done in a professional career. I mean, it's a couple hours of sleep, it's up in the morning, it's driving all night. I mean, literally, there were times when, you know, you might be up for almost 2 days straight, and you, as scary as it is, you fall asleep at a red light.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
No, 100%.
And people have to, you know, the car horn behind you
is what wakes you up.
Is what wakes you up, you know? So.
And who knows what you were dreaming about.
Right. But I mean.
Those like sleepless dreams are the most fucked up dreams you can have because they're quasi real.
Dude, this is a true story. Kind of embarrassing, but literally, the one night that I got to sleep, I slept so hard that I pissed the bed.
Yeah.
Didn't even wake up anything because it was just like. I hadn't slept in almost 2 days.
And you hadn't pissed in 4 months.
And I pissed the van. Oh, yeah. You know what I'm saying? There wasn't even a bed to pee in. You just pee the van.
You just peed yourself and you were the van.
Exactly.
And the van was you.
So I've told that story on the podcast before. It's kind of embarrassing. But yeah, I mean, that's just, that's how you roll, man.
So you've been in a lot of different bands.
Yes.
You've hustled your ass off.
I have done that, yes.
What's the favorite song that you've either played or written on? Like, is there just a song where you're like, if I had to, you know, think about every big band has that one hit where they fucking hate it because it was like the theme to Friends or whatever and they have to play it.
The Rembrandts.
But then there's always that one song where you're like, I would play this song, you know, at my own wedding if I could, right? Like, what's the one song that you're just like...
Well, there's probably...
Doesn't matter the band. I mean, I know you're going to have to alienate yeah. someone or something by not selecting something, but really, what's the... As the drummer, right? Like,
I would probably say, see, I love Dead Friends. I love Dances with Wolves. I could play that song, both of those songs all the time. I'm super proud of those too. But there's the ballad off of Trash Talk called Ocean of You. And mm-hmm. I always love playing it because it's like the one track where it's slow and it's like sexy and mm-hmm. you can hit really hard, but you also get a breather. You also get a chance to drink the water. And I'm like, as long as I can get to this song, you know,
yeah,
I'm going to be fine. But I just grew to love that song because there's a lot more technical drum parts in it than is usually displayed by me. And it's just kind of a nice ballad, a little change of pace. That's probably my favorite song that I feel we had ever written or that I'd ever been a part of the writing process. And I got to write some of the lines in the chorus. So I got a songwriting credit for that. Cha-ching. So I still get checks every once in a while for that.
Nice. Do so. We, let's pretend that we have a clip to insert.
I can insert a clip if we like. Do you want, should we break for a song?
We're gonna insert a clip of that song. I think now would be a perfect time to do it.
All right. Do you want to give it a big introduction? You say this is Ocean of You by Uh-Huh Baby Yeah.
I think you just did.
Nailed it. Taking you to Toontown, guys, right now.
Sexy.
Yeah, thank you. I'm glad that you enjoyed that.
I feel like the first time I heard Make Tonight by Emmanuel. I feel like I just relived that moment with you.
Right, because it's almost not. It's almost the same song. You're right.
If I had a dollar for every time I tried to write an Emmanuel song,
dude, it was just too sexy, man.
I could afford to actually put out all of my albums. So we talked about your favorite song. Talked about some of the bands you've been in. Who is your dream band to open with? Open for, rather, or tour with? Like, who? I mean, other than Kiss. That's we all know.
Yeah, Kiss is definitely number one. Are you talking about an active band or just any band in general?
I mean, preferably, yeah. At least alive.
I was going to say, seeing like a band like Queen or Black Sabbath would definitely be.
Yeah, but that's like, yeah, no fucking shit. Everyone's going to say Queen because, yeah. I'm thinking like semi-realistic. So like for me, it's Thrice.
Yeah.
And then like Thrice is the band that's like in a weird part of my mind is like somewhat realistic. And then like Muse is the band that's like not realistic at all.
Right. I would probably say Ghost.
Yeah.
Honestly, I would. That's, you know, they are just now playing arenas. You know, they've been kind of a club band, but I saw them. I love their shtick. I love their live show. I love the whole gimmick. I mean, just as much as I love Kiss, I mean, Ghost is the new Kiss. You know what I'm saying? Their image does not match their music. Their music is way more rock and pop and not as heavy, you know what I'm saying, as you would think a band that looks
they
like
look
that would
like
be.
Norwegian black metal.
Exactly. Like, and you thought it would just be blast beats the whole time, but instead like, it's like all they're psychedelic.
They're like, welcome to the jungle, I assume. I don't know.
No. Yeah, similar. Very similar.
So Ghost, that's perfect. This is where we're going to try to lean towards the crying side of things now. Is that okay?
All right, man. Let's make it happen. Let's roll.
We've asked a lot of kind of surface level,
right?
Fun facts.
I feel like
questions.
I'm not like I'm honest on my show, but I don't ever get too deep with myself on the show. So maybe we'll see what comes out here.
We're gonna try to get into like some Marc Maron territory, right?
Right, exactly. Where it's like, oh, I've been in recovery.
The first time I did heroin.
Yeah, that's definitely Marc Maron territory.
What is your biggest regret from your bands that you were in? Like, what's the one thing that you're like, oh, we should have done this or we shouldn't have done that? Like, you know. Is there something that just stands out to you that, yeah, I hate regret. I hate the whole woulda, coulda, shoulda, right? Like, but that doesn't mean that it's not there. Like, what's something that you really wish you had done differently in your musical career?
Honestly, I wish, as much as I loved the experience of going to LA and being out there for weeks and recording with Jeff Seyoun, he was in Guitarist of Let Live. I love those dudes. I love everything about the experience. But I would say in retrospect, I think we should have maybe just recorded with Jordan again, recorded at home.
Put our money into something else in marketing. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yep.
And there was a lot of stuff that kind of went along with that recording of it and having to ask for help and for money, and I'm not into that. We should have, to me, honestly, my biggest regret is we should have recorded it with Jordan, recorded it at home, saved the money, and probably shopped out the record to a different label.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
I wouldn't say to a different label, but I would say maybe just shopped out the record differently. You know what I'm saying?
Try to get more distribution, more promotion, or
yeah. Well, and the thing is towards the end with things, it became such a, it just became such a thing where, you know, we were.
This is Illuminasti,
right? Yeah, Illuminasti.
Okay, I feel one of like seven physical CDs I still own.
Nice.
Very it's like nice. That,
and you're probably one of about seven people that bought it.
Yeah, time and place. The new Artica EP. I'm trying to think. Like, I only own local CDs physically anymore.
Right. And I mean, okay, so let me just backtrack. I mean, no disrespect to any label or anything like that, but I'm just saying, like, I think that I would like to have spent that money and kind of put it in a different spot. Mm-hmm. Because towards the end, it was like we were owing money. We were, like, living on a shoestring budget. We were in debt personally, mm-hmm. using all of our personal finances to fund the band. We had management. We had publicists, we had a label, we had these tours and stuff, and we were paying for it all out of pocket. And ultimately, I think the end of the band was heavily influenced by strictly our financial situation. We were four dudes that were ran ragged financially into the ground trying to support ourselves, or in some cases supporting wives and girlfriends and kids and all kinds of stuff like that, you know.
Right.
And it sucks that it kind of came to that and we kind of grew to resent each other because, you know, it could be a thing where, like, you know, you might bust your ass, but you got to give a little bit more money because somebody's harder up than you. Like, one brother's yep. harder up than the other, you know?
That happens all the time.
And
I'm usually, full disclosure, I'm usually the guy who's like, oh, it's cool. I still have 7 more credit cards I haven't maxed out yet.
That's usually me, too. I'm usually, yeah. But towards the end, it'd be like, well, you know, hell, I'm...
Now I'm $500,000 in debt. Like, right. What the fuck?
I'm giving all my money away. But yeah, and this, I would say, I guess that had a lot of regret to it. I didn't kind of like the whole way that went down.
Yeah.
But, I guess it's all of about the learning experience. I love being
sure,
in LA.
Sure.
I love being in California. I love working with Jeff. I love that we got with Revival Records. I love that we got the management that we did and all that sort of thing. But in retrospect, maybe that would have been a different career path that I would have. Taken yeah. on that and put that money elsewhere.
No, I mean, I think that's valuable. I mean, I recently joined the Last Band Standing group. I don't know if you're familiar with it. I know Kevin's in it.
I am not.
So it's Joey Sergis, who's a buddy of mine, Tyler Smith, who's also out in LA. And they're essentially trying to help, you know, independent bands and up and coming bands and artists get their shit together, essentially.
Right.
That feels like the content of the type of things. They're trying to do more of that unpacking of the, like, don't waste your time, you know, or learn from my mistakes, like
right,
more
yeah,
of that
exactly.
kind of peer mentor type stuff. So I think, I mean, that sentiment or that thought alone would be really valuable to a group like that. So
yeah.
I appreciate you sharing
well,
that with
life
us.
Is learned by your mistakes. And honestly though, like had we made maybe all the best decisions, this you'd never hear me mention this or talk at all on a podcast.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
This led me to the podcast.
Other doors open and other doors.
Yeah.
Yeah. No,
well, just basically the financial state of playing music. And once we decided, you know, hey, we need to kind of break up or we're going to grow to hate each other and this,
right.
we're going to beat this dead horse until it can't take us anymore. You know, once that happened, I was like, I'm not going to jump back into doing anything. Another band. Not right now.
Right.
I need to get my finance together. I need to start rebuilding my credit.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Get some stuff together. And so in the meantime, I did a podcast and, you know.
Here we are, 82 weeks in.
Yeah, exactly.
That's fucking nuts. So this isn't going to make anyone cry, but this is like some really inside baseball stuff. And this may not appeal to your listeners in the UK.
Right.
Or your listeners in Czechoslovakia or... Argentina,
right?
That was the most accurate way to pronounce that I could muster up. But so I'm a Louisville person,
right?
I didn't grow up here, but I moved here for undergrad, so I've been here since I was like 17.
Sure,
you're an Indiana person,
absolutely. Yeah,
we're like Kentuckiana, right? Like that's like the thing, like Southern Indiana, Louisville. People from Southern Indiana say they're from Louisville, but like, was there like? Talk to me about kind of that rift between, because there's a lot of really smart, really talented musicians from Indiana that claim Louisville. Obviously, there's a lot of people in Louisville. Like, did you ever feel like there was some weird difference there, or did it all feel like one thing to you? Like, kind of what's the Indiana perspective on the Louisville music scene is essentially what I'm getting at.
I guess the biggest difference that I felt was for 10 years of the career, we just didn't fit in. You know, I felt like Louisville did... a lot of Louisville bands did the exact same thing that every band. It's like, okay, you are a screamo band that sounds like this, or you're a hardcore band that sounds like this, or you're a grindcore band that sounds like this.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a lot of the Indiana boys and the Indiana bands and stuff were kind of doing their own thing, doing something different.
Yeah.
And we always wrote, you know, even when we tried to be a screamo band or we were trying to be a whatever, I mean, it all almost comes back to Emmanuel, because like Emmanuel has... this rock and roll sound that they really pioneered, that bands like Loreen Drive and The Audition and stuff like that went on to run with.
Right.
You know, that kind of rock and roll. And that's infused in Southern Indiana music.
Yeah,
you know what I'm
for
saying?
Sure.
So bands, even, you know, if you're a heavier band or whatever, that Emmanuel sound is infused. It still is. Listen to a band like Foxbat, for example.
Yeah.
You know, that's infused into the DNA of Indiana. Whereas I feel like Louisville didn't necessarily have that. You know?
Yeah.
And the biggest difference is we just never fit in at all.
Did you ever feel like, I mean, you say you didn't fit in. Did you ever feel that? Like, did you ever feel like you couldn't get certain shows, or did you ever feel like people wouldn't come to your show? Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Was there ever a rift
the
there?
The thing is we could go, and we noticed that a long time ago. So we realized, okay, well, we can draw better in North Carolina than we can in Louisville. We can draw better in Cincinnati or this place or that place. You know, right. We'll go down to Florida. We're going to go to, you know, South Carolina. We're going to go up to New York. We're going to play these shows and start getting out there and touring, because the mystique of a band coming from out of town is better than a band that is from here that you can come see.
Yep.
That people don't give a shit about, you know? Yep. And so we might play in front of 20 or 30 people here. We might play, you know, in front of 150, 200 kids in North Carolina.
Yep.
So we were kind of a little hidden secret because nobody really, I mean, nobody in Louisville was there to see the shows. And I think it wasn't until Trash Talk came out. I mean, a little bit once, Till Death Do Us Party, our first album, our only full length. When that was out, I feel that the production specifically, people started being like, man, this sounds really good. This is a really good produced album. And the live shows really...
Who did that record?
Joe Costable, who did like Neon Trees. He worked for Island Def Jam.
Is that the one you guys did in New York?
Yeah.
Okay, I remember
So we
that.
Did that in New York. And I think when we came back with that, almost like when Emmanuel came back with Machine, prime example, when Greyhaven came back with their record. You know what I'm saying? Like, dude, people were just like, oh, goddamn, this is what I've been thinking
about.
Is this
the point where you could, like, pause the podcast and then we have a five-hour conversation about how good that record is?
Dude, it's fantastic.
And then we resume the podcast, yeah.
It's fantastic. Everybody out there listening, go get Empty Black by Greyhaven.
So fucking good.
If you don't know who Greyhaven is, you fucking should. And go back into the archives and check out... I've done a podcast with the full band Greyhaven. I also did a podcast with Brent. So there's two Greyhaven podcasts for you to check out.
Yeah.
And definitely do that. But so, like, that's the thing. Yeah. That's when the buzz comes back. I saw it with Emmanuel. I saw it with Greyhaven. And I saw it myself for a little bit, but once Trash Talk came out and then we got the Warped Tour, that's when the shift happened.
Uh-huh.
And people were like, man, you know, what's it like to succeed in Louisville? Like, what did it take? I'm like, all it took was 10 years and getting on 2 years of Warped Tour all by yourself.
Right.
For people to come out.
Well, and even then, you said in Louisville, right? So that's like that's its own weird dichotomy, right? Is you're in a different state, but you live closer to me than like half of the people in Louisville do.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like
there's
7 minute drive.
In Indiana at all anyway to play.
Faith Family.
Yeah. I think that I've never played there.
You haven't?
No.
It's actually kind of fun.
I did play at remember the warehouse?
No.
I'm gonna tell you a fun story. The warehouse is a church. And when I was in Suburban Blood Drive, which was like a loud punk rock band, back in the day,
Dittmeyer the Vampire.
Yes, Dittmeyer the Vampire was banned from the warehouse due to their unchristian-like antics. And then they finally let Suburban Blood Drive play again, and I was in the band at the time. And Nick Dittmeyer shows up in a black T-shirt, which he had ironed on the iron-on letters, the phrase, "Abortion is dinner." To which we immediately were kicked out yet again. Fun Suburban Blood Drive story.
I feel like that T-shirt would crush it at Forecastle.
We're going to make it. Dude, let's start making them.
The alt country.
let's go ahead and get the iron-on letters. But yeah, I guess that's the distinction. I mean, it's Louisville because you got to go to Louisville to play the shows. You know what I'm saying? But yeah.
What's so funny, though, is that I remember in Hark the Herald specifically, all of our best shows and all of our favorite shows were in Indiana. In this area.
The
like,
Groove Cafe.
Ironically, you said North Carolina. We had a bunch of great shows in North Carolina. Dude, or Wisconsin, right? Like random fucking places. Because you're not competing with anything. I think that's the problem with... Louisville's not a big city, right? But it's big enough to where you're always competing with something.
There's a ton of bands. There's a ton of awesome bands, too.
Or there's just a ton of other shit.
Right, yeah.
Like, you're going to play a concert, and there's also, like, 15 fundraisers that night, and there's 30 plays, and, you know, like... Whereas if you go to Stevens Point, Wisconsin, like you're the entire town's entertainment for one night.
Yeah. One time we were driving through Hebron, Kentucky.
That's where I went to high school.
Really?
Literally.
So we were driving through Hebron, Kentucky. We stopped at a gas station or a truck stop or whatever there. And this guy just kept wanting to talk to us about the band or whatever. And we were leaving. And then Johnny Goble, who was in our band, you guys might know Johnny Goble from the Whiskey Riders. And he just looks at me and goes, y'all the biggest thing to come through Hebron since Conway Twitty. I'm like, you're so right.
Was he in the van with you guys?
He was in the band with us at the time. Like, this was early, early Uh-Huh Baby. Yeah, right after.
Oh, wow.
During
I never knew that Johnny was in your band.
Everybody in Southern Indiana Louisville has probably been in our band at one point.
Joe Brock. List all the members of Creatures / Uh-Huh Baby.
Okay.
Yeah.
Kevin Fletcher, John Brayboy.
Never heard of her.
John Brayboy, Wes Carroll, Joe Brock, Sean Smith, me, of course. Ryan Matthews played with us briefly. Mm-hmm. Johnny Goble. John Cox played keyboard.
Who's the redheaded guy?
The redheaded guy.
Maybe I just made that up.
John Cox had red hair.
No, not John Cox. I feel like there was a guy with red hair that was in some band. I don't know. Maybe I made that up.
Man, but there was a time we played with so many people.
Yeah.
Throughout the years.
I'm actually kind of sad that I was never in that band.
Me too. Honestly, yeah.
I was almost in Amherst. That's my like only claim to fame.
So you should put that on your business, your LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Almost in
Can
Amherst.
Can you endorse me for Almost in Amherst?
Spear, if you're listening.
If Amherst had let me in, Disco / Hark the Herald may have never happened, so. And then we'd all be fucked.
Yeah, life happens for a reason, dude.
Then the Terminator would have come 4 years earlier, so.
Exactly.
All right, so we're gonna do a transition here. I know we're pretty deep. We're probably into part two at this point, but. We're going to do a bit of a transition here. We've been talking a lot of music. I want to talk podcasts.
Okay.
Is that cool with you?
Sounds great. Boom, people. That's it for episode one. Make sure you tune in next week for the exciting conclusion. The Zach Attack will be back, Jack, and he's going to be asking me all about my move from music into podcasting. A lot of great stories, a lot of great information coming up in episode two. So make sure that you definitely check it out. And if you haven't already, please like, share, and subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Apple Music, YouTube, all that good sort of thing. You heard a little bit about me. You got a little bit of my background story. So please feel free to support the show. It's absolutely free. That's what I like about podcasting. It's free. You get a lot of great entertainment. But yeah, just do those little things to help support the show. And until then, guys, stay weird, stay wonderful, and of course, stay wild. This has been the Sean versus Wild podcast.
Thank you for listening, DNN.